You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Good afternoon. Reporting remotely for WFHB, this is Catherine Patterson.
And I'm Don Guerra.
Last week, the U.S. Army did some exercises on flight operations.
Later in the program, we have a few minutes with the mayor, a weekly segment where WFHB Assistant News Director Jake Jacobson poses questions to Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton on community-related issues. More coming up in today's feature report.
We need to have them vaccinated, fully vaccinated by September 1st.
I get to decide what I believe is right for my body and for my family and for my future.
Also coming up, a rally took place over the weekend outside an IU Health facility in Indianapolis to oppose the hospital system's vaccine mandate. More in today's headlines. But first, your local news brief.
From WFHB, this is the local news for Monday, June 14th. I'm Catherine Patterson. The amount of COVID-19 cases in Monroe County has decreased by 8% within the last 2 weeks. 49% of the population 18 and over have been fully vaccinated, with residents in Monroe County 65 and older being 80%. For those who have not been vaccinated, Monroe County is still considered a high-risk area for COVID-19 and are encouraged to wear a mask in public settings. Now, citizens who have not been vaccinated have a fourth option, Novavax. In clinical trials, it proved to prevent moderate to severe disease from contracting coronavirus and had a 9 out of 10 efficiency, higher than Johnson & Johnson. To schedule an appointment to get the COVID-19 vaccine, visit cdc.gov. On Thursday, members of the Bloomington community joined together to protest the vaccination requirement for all students, faculty, and staff at Indiana University. The march was labeled as Rally for Medical Freedom, with alumni and students announcing their strong beliefs against the mandate. This comes after the announcement that documentation of the vaccine will not be required. Some posters being displayed said, "My body, my choice," and "Mandate medical freedom." With only a final few days left in office, Indiana legislators have been scrambling to find a way to spend their $3 billion portion of the federal coronavirus relief money. Following in line with other states, the money will be going to schools, businesses, and highways. However, legislators have focused on spending that money elsewhere, creating a program helping members of the working class earn short-term training certifications in order to advance their careers. With such a short amount of time for this to go through, Senate Appropriations Committee Chairman Ryan Mishler said that there wasn't enough time to create specifics on the spending. President of the nonpartisan Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute says that this $75 million deal is eyebrow-raising. That's all for your local news. From WFHB, I'm Catherine Patterson.
At the June 11th coronavirus press conference, Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton said Bloomington has reported zero positive COVID-19 cases among city employees for the fourth consecutive week. However, he confirmed that a city employee has died from COVID-19 complications.
We just learned officially, formally, of the first time that we know an employee passed away from COVID. So I do want to note that they are not identified by name out of respect, of course, and confidentiality. But in the vein of continuing to reveal that, that reminds us that this disease is still very much among us and can be dire and can bring terrible consequences like that. So I just want to express our sympathy and condolences to family members, and also just a reminder. And one reason for this transparency is just to let us know at this kind of direct level that this is still a big deal and we are not out of the woods either as a community or individuals at risk.
Monroe County Health Administrator Penny Caudle announced that the OptumServe testing site at the National Guard Armory will be closing by June 30th. She acknowledged that the testing site played a pivotal role in bringing COVID-19 numbers down, but that the demand for testing has dropped significantly.
With vaccinations arriving and more people being vaccinated, the need for testing has dropped. In February, Optum sites were seeing about 50 people a day. In May, around 30.
Caudill said it is free to get tested at the community testing site at 640 South Morton Street, which will remain open until further notice.
Several hundred people attended a rally on Saturday to oppose Indiana University Health's vaccine mandate. In early June, officials at IU Health, the state's largest hospital system, announced that all employees will need to receive the COVID-19 vaccine by September 1st. According to IU Health President Brian Shockney, the process will look familiar to its other vaccine requirements, such as the flu shot.
So we need to have them vaccinated, fully vaccinated by September 1st. That is to say, though, if someone were to get their final vaccine prior to that date, we would certainly honor that. But that, just like any other deadline, you have to set the date, right? And so that is the date that we want to work toward. As you know, Kathy said, there's 15 sites, no less than 15 sites in Monroe County and other counties where people can get the vaccine. So it's easy to do that at any time and make that available. Also, all of our new team members, so as they are onboarding, all of our new team members, just as they have to have their other vaccinations to work in our facilities and have for years, they will have to get the COVID-19 vaccine as part of their onboarding process as well.
IU Health has been known to take vaccination requirements seriously. According to the Associated Press, the hospital system fired 8 employees in 2013 for refusing to get their flu shot. One speaker at the protest over the weekend said the vaccine mandate infringes upon, quote, individual freedom, end quote.
I get to decide what I believe is right for my body and for my family and for my future.
The rally took place outside an IU Health facility in Indianapolis. While IU officials said in a statement that the vaccine mandate provides a safe and effective way to protect students and staff, the nonprofit healthcare provider will allow exemptions for medical or religious reasons. Carrie Bundy, another speaker at the protest, complained about the mask and social distancing requirements for those who are exempt from getting the COVID shot.
You have to wear your mask at all times while always staying 3 feet from others. And to eat or drink at all, you will have to stand 6 feet away. This level of segregation is unacceptable.
Meanwhile, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's guidelines for unvaccinated people, masks are recommended for all indoor activities and even some outdoor activities. According to Georgetown law professor and public health expert Lawrence Gostin, quote, it is lawful and ethical for a business to require proof of vaccination as a condition of working, end quote, as long as they offer medical or religious exemptions. However, as referenced in Indiana House Enrolled Act 105, the state has placed a ban on requiring a COVID-19 passport. According to the New York Times state-by-state vaccine tracker, Indiana ranks in the bottom quarter of adults who have received at least one shot of the COVID vaccine.
The Public Safety Local Income Tax, or PSLIT, committee met for the first time in 2021 on June 10th. At the PSLIT meeting, committee members discussed who would review applications for funds. Committee member Jeff McKim read a statement on behalf of committee member Cheryl Munson, who had a conflicting meeting. She wrote that delegating applications to the Monroe County Council without recommending any funding is a waste of the council's time.
Last year, fire departments spent time preparing applications. The County Council committee spent time reviewing and ranking applications and preparing recommendations for the PS Lit committee. And the PS Lit committee awarded no funding to any of the applicants. The County Council does not want to participate in such a waste of time again for our committee members, the County Council, and the fire departments.
City of Bloomington Controller Jeff Underwood stated that the city recommends that the committee not approve funding unless it is for one of the four major applicants. Committee member Scott Oldham agreed, but said he would support reviewing applications for emergency funds.
I think we should consider emergency funding requests. I mean, if they can verify that this is truly an emergency and we have to have this, as we did a few years ago with the SCBA tanks, that we should most certainly look at that. But some of the wish lists that have come before this committee in the last 4 or 5 years have been, at least in my mind, problematic as it relates to general fund monies versus what is supposed to be supplemental funding. Quite honestly, I would be in favor of looking at the emergency level funding. But beyond that, I would kind of concur with Mr. Underwood that it should go to the four qualified providers or the four providers that are certified, and then they can distribute monies as they see fit to other parties as they wish.
Committee members agreed to review applications themselves this year.
The Bloomington Historic Preservation Commission discussed a historical building on North Morton Street. At the June 10th meeting, petitioner Rich Hamm talked about buying a historical building at 601 North Morton. He clarified that he wanted to keep the spirit of the current building when making renovations.
We have a vision of keeping the spirit of the building and keeping what's important to everybody to the greatest extent possible, and balancing that with, a little shiny new feel to it that fits with the city's vision for the area. But beyond that, the vision isn't really fleshed out yet, and we want you guys to, influence where we go from here.
Commissioner Doug Bruce showed support for the project. He talked about the historical importance of the building and his excitement that someone was willing to put in the work to restore it.
Obviously, this building really needs someone's attention soon. Every time I go by it, I keep thinking, I know it's a costly renovation, but at some point, we don't want to lose this building. So I applaud you undertaking this, and definitely, I think it's a very worthwhile project, and I can't wait till we see some of the ideas that you guys are going to bring forth.
The next meeting of the Bloomington Historic Preservation Commission is June 24th.
Landfill and Environmental Compliance Director Lee Paulson presented the organization's monthly report at the June 10th Monroe County Solid Waste Management District Board of Directors meeting. He highlighted that May's groundwater sampling was completed and sent in for testing.
Now that we can do our groundwater sampling in May, we hit that pretty hard, Mary Beth and I, the first 2 weeks, and got through everything without any issues, kind of before weather, kind of in amongst that kind of stuff. Everything went pretty smooth. All the samples were all sent overnight FedEx to Element Materials up in Fort Wayne, and I'm just waiting for their report and their documentation of all the samples to forward them on to AECOM for statistical analysis. So,
board member Penny Githens noticed a significant difference in rainfall from 2019 to 2020. Paulson said last year had the highest rainfall since the county started tracking groundwater.
Since we started this stuff, last year was the wettest year we've had. So, more 3 or 4 or 5 inches less than last year is, I think, more average, more typical.
The next Solid Waste Management Board of Directors meeting is July 8th.
Up next, we have the latest edition of A Few Minutes with the Mayor, a weekly segment where WFHB Assistant News Director Jake Jacobson poses questions to Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton on community-related issues. In today's program, Jacobson asked Mayor Hamilton about overnight military testing in Bloomington last week and a city employee who recently died from COVID-19. All that and more in today's edition of A Few Minutes with the Mayor.
Each week, community members and volunteers at WFHB pose questions for Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton about local current events. Today, on A Few Minutes with the Mayor, Mayor John Hamilton answers some of those questions. Last week, we had some sort of surprise military training in town. The U.S. military came in, I believe it was Monday night, in Bloomington, and then Tuesday night sort of in out near Ellettsville. I don't know as much about the Ellettsville one. I don't know how close to town it was. And I'm curious, how much can you talk about what that conversation was like? Like, what I know from sort of conversations with the police department, it seems like these conversations had been happening you know, since a little earlier in the year. Can you talk a little bit about what that conversation was like with the U.S. military and like what those conversations were actually about leading up to last week's training?
Sure. And yes, last week, the U.S. Army, and it was a special forces group out of Fort Bragg, North Carolina, did some exercises involving, I believe, four helicopters and a few dozen people on flight operations and kind of close urban combat maneuvers, if you will. And it was, I personally didn't hear it. I know it was very noisy and upsetting for some. We did know the city had been notified ahead by the Army that they wanted to do this. I didn't know the exact date, and our police department basically coordinated with the military to help them in their maneuvers. Of course, we appreciate their service and their helping keep us safe, and good training is really important. And they used an empty building there on near Switchyard Park to do some particularized training. And I know the police department knew ahead of time the day. They helped make sure there weren't people in the immediate vicinity of the maneuvers and coordinated with the Army. I also know there is serious sensitivity about early broadcast of when that kind of maneuver happens to keep everybody safe and to make it effective and useful training. But I do think we could have, that we collectively could have put out social media more quickly than we did. And next time, if this were to happen again, I'll look forward to quicker social media notice about that.
So I'm actually glad you brought that up. Indiana Public Media, in conversation with Elise Van Poole, who is a public affairs officer with the military, said that for these specific drills in Monroe County, that there was a request sort of to make a more broad announcement just to give more warning about training activities. In the statement that the city of Bloomington made on Facebook, you said that the opposite had been suggested to you. Could you talk more about how that specific part of the conversation went?
Sure. Well, I never spoke with anybody about it. We did get a notice a couple months ago about the planned training, and I never spoke with anyone, but said we appreciate the heads up and asked the police department to coordinate with them. And I saw the sheriff referencing some previous examples of this. I don't think it's, look, I didn't, so I never communicated directly with the Army. You know, these are coordinations in events that are important to have so that people stay safe on all sides of this this activity. And I'm glad everybody was safe, though there were some people who were disturbed and upset. And I believe notice was given by the Army in flyers to people in the immediate vicinity. But of course, flyers don't hit everybody, and not everybody reads them. And I do think some more timely social media notice, either before or during or immediately thereafter, is advisable. And I'll ask our police department, who coordinates with the Army, to make sure that happens next time.
Would it be fair to say that the it seems like the police department had the most to do with the coordination, more than sort of the city or the mayor's office?
Well, they had more to do with coordination than the mayor's office, for sure. They were on the ground and working with them directly. They're part of the city government, of course, and you know, we work together, but they were the ones who would be and did, were expected to and did coordinate with the Army to make sure that the exercise could happen smoothly.
Can you, if you know, can you talk more about what the police department's role in that was?
I'm happy to share that, as far as I know. And then, of course, they can answer more specific questions if there's some. But so far as I know, the police department helped the evening of the exercises by, I believe they're off-duty police officers brought in by the Army to help just make sure and nobody wandered into the area that was exactly part of the exercise, where there was noise and potentially even shrapnel. I don't know exactly what happened, but they were there basically to make sure people
inadvertently or purposely didn't get too close to the site of the exercises. That's what I understand. And I think they did that successfully, so far as I can tell. And nobody was injured, for sure, in that exercise. But that was their basic role that evening, just kind of making sure nobody wandered into the site.
So it was a logistical role in terms of getting the event set up, working with the military to have the event set up. But then on the actual night of the training, it was just more of a setting up structures and roadblocks kind of role.
Yes, I don't know any details about roadblocks, but I know that the basic purpose was just to try to make sure there wasn't anybody in harm's way or too close to the exercises, and basically crowd control kind of efforts.
I did not mean to imply that there were literal roadblocks set up, just that that was sort of what their role was. Can you talk to us a little more about the city employee who recently passed away from COVID?
Well, it was very sad news. Of course, anytime we lose a city employee, an active employee or retired, it's sad. This one was an active employee whose death was recently confirmed by the coroner and death certificate as being caused at least in part by COVID-19 infection. So when we had that formal notice provided, we shared that with the public. We do not name the individual. The family has not. It's a matter of privacy. But we do have tried to be very transparent from the beginning about the impact of this pandemic on the city workforce. Works for all of us in the city, employed in the city and paid by the residents of Bloomington. And so it was a very sad day and a reminder that this pandemic is still with us and still very dangerous. I reported today that the state death rate is as low as it's been from COVID since the beginning in March of last year, at about 6 a day, but that's still 6 people a day dying in our state from COVID infections, which is 2 or 3 times as many people typically die from a car accident in the state. So it's still very dangerous. People are hospitalized for this, get very sick, and some of them pass away. So we don't share any more detailed information, but we regret and of course are very sad about the loss of the employee and send our condolences to their family.
It's been 4 weeks now without a city positive. Is that right?
That's correct. We've gone 4 weeks without any city employee testing positive.
So obviously, as you've already said, like we are still in the middle of a pandemic. This is a sort of a grim reminder. But with sort of city cases at least staying down, is this something that you are? How worried are you that this could happen again? I guess.
Well, we're pleased that the numbers are better, but we know that the vaccine is how we win, ultimately. And we know we don't have enough people vaccinated yet. And we know that there are a fair number of people, both in our community and around the state and around the country, who are declining to get vaccinated. Indiana is among the lowest states in the country in terms of vaccination rates. We're in the bottom quarter or so of states, and that's unfortunate, because it means we're going to be at greater risk of a resurgence in the fall. I do think our county is in better position than the state as a whole, not dramatically, but I do think things like IU requiring vaccinations and IU Health requiring vaccinations of its staff, the IU of its staff, faculty, and students, those are really big deals to help just up the numbers of vaccinated people in our community. So I'm concerned. We're pleased to see the improvements, but I'm still concerned that we're not out of the woods yet. As we're reminded, you have to stay humble with this virus, because when we think we understand it, it'll take a twist and surprise us. So we have to stay really vigilant, and I'll encourage everybody to get vaccinated if you haven't. If you have, we thank you. And if you have not, please, there are more than a dozen sites you can walk in and get vaccinations around our community, and we encourage you to do so. That's what keeps you and your family and our community safe.
Do you have questions for Mayor John Hamilton? Send them in an email to news@wfhb.org, titled Questions for the Mayor. For WFHB, I'm Jake Jacobson.
You've been listening to the WFHB Local News. Today's headlines were written by Catherine Patterson, Cade Young, and Jake Jacobson in partnership with CATS, Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Jake Jacobson.
Our theme music is provided by Mark Bingham and the Social Climbers. Engineer and executive producer is Cade Young. For WFHB, I'm Catherine Patterson.
And I'm Don Guerra. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast online at WFHB.org.
The WFHB local news is also available as a podcast. Just search our call letters, WFHB, wherever you find your podcasts. Subscribe to never miss another local news program.
Stay tuned for With Good Reason, coming up next on WFHB.
Listening to the WFHB local news on WFHB Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news at WFHB.org. You can become a WFHB local news volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. Feel free to check out the WFHB local news archive at WFHB.org to find newscasts, individual stories, and catch a live feed of the WFHB local news. We are local, longer,